Welcome in to the Follow On podcast here on followoncricket.com. Chinmay Vaidya, Ashay Chavan, and Anish Tal here with me. Guys, a lot of cricket news to get to. Coming out of Pakistan, New Zealand withdrew from their scheduled tour of Pakistan, and England has also withdrawn from their scheduled tour of Pakistan amid security concerns. We'll get into exactly what that is. I have a long spiel coming on that, so stay tuned. India's tour of England concluded with the fifth test being called off, but not due to weather. We'll talk about exactly what went down there. And the IPL restart has happened. The games are going on, and we'll talk about some of those early games as well as get into our updated predictions. But we'll start with New Zealand and England and the tours of Pakistan that have now been called off. I'm just going to read the statement from New Zealand Cricket. This is NZC Chief Executive David White saying, "I understand this will be a blow for the PCB, who have been wonderful hosts, but player safety is paramount, and we believe this is the only responsible option." New Zealand Cricket Players Association Chief Executive Heath Mills says, "We've been across this process throughout and are fully supportive of the decision. The players are in good hands, they're safe, and everyone's acting in their best interests." Now, the reason that New Zealand pulled out was because the team received, quote unquote, a credible security threat, which threatened, obviously, player safety. Now, here's the statement that the England Cricket Board released, and it is a long one, and it is a doozy. "The ECB has a long-standing commitment to tour Pakistan as part of the men's future tours program in 2022. Earlier this year, we agreed to play two additional T20 World Cup warm-up games in Pakistan in October, adding a short women's tour to doubleheaders alongside the men's game. The ECB board convened this weekend to discuss these extra England women's and men's games in Pakistan, and we can confirm that the board has reluctantly decided to withdraw both teams from the October trip." Here's the money paragraph, in my opinion. "The mental and physical well-being of our players and support staff remains our highest priority, and this is even more critical given the times we are currently living in. We know there are increasing concerns about traveling to the region, and we believe that going ahead will add further pressure to the playing group, who have already coped with the long period of operating in restricted COVID environments." It goes on to talk about the T20 World Cup preparation. And there's another thing that is in there that I'll get to when I go on my long rant that is coming, but I'll hand it to you guys first. Anish, your thoughts on what has happened. And we've talked about, you know, Pakistan hosting cricket games for a while now. And it seems like this is just another blow for them to kind of get back to hosting cricket tours. And I don't know what the next step is for them.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate to see this, especially given the issues they've had in the past. And, you know, it seems like the recent series when they've had teams touring have gone on pretty well. And, you know, from the public standpoint, it seems like a unilateral decision was made. I really wonder how much true collaboration was made between the New Zealand board, the England board, and the Pakistan board regarding these threats. It's really sad to see. I think at the end of the day, you know, the players for New Zealand and England, if they say that they don't want to go, then the boards aren't going to really be able to have much pull in terms of forcing them to go. And even if, like, you know, there's a alleged threat that one of the boards received, even if the Pakistan Cricket Board is able to discredit the threat or investigate it further, I feel like the traveling team still have this gut feeling about not feeling safe. Now, in terms of the England Cricket Board and the end of that paragraph that you were reading, Chinmay, it seems like a pretty weak statement in terms of pulling the pandemic into their decision not to make this tour. I feel like they probably would have made this decision regardless of the pandemic or not, and we're just using this time to make a statement about prioritizing the mental health of their athletes, especially after one of their biggest stars, Ben Stokes, decided to take time away from the team. So I think this seems mostly like a publicity stunt from the ECB.
I think using the pandemic, COVID, and the mental health is not necessarily a weak statement to put out, but I think they're just trying to piggyback off of the Zeon one, which, if they had just came out and said that, would have been more respectable. Because if New Zealand is saying that their board received a threat, and then obviously I think Pakistan is going to downplay it because they want to host cricket. They know their fans, their players want to play home matches that are not in the UAE. So they're going to do their best, or, you know, like put out a statement saying that they discredit the threat. At the end of the day, players don't feel safe based on the info they have at the time, then really there's nothing you can do.
I get what you guys are saying, and I understand the kind of the skepticism in this. Let me read one more paragraph for both of you in this ECB statement, and then I'll kind of dive into my thoughts on this. This is the last paragraph. We understand that this decision will be a significant disappointment to the PCB, who have worked tirelessly to host the return of international cricket in their country. Their support of English and Welsh cricket over the last two summers has been a huge demonstration of friendship. We are sincerely sorry for the impact this will have on cricket in Pakistan and emphasize an ongoing commitment to our main touring plans there for 2022. In this entire England statement, I don't think any of it is false. I think everything on some level is true. I also think it is complete bullshit. The idea that Pakistan came to England in the early days of the pandemic to play a tour there so the ECB could recover its broadcast money and sponsor money and not suffer the losses that it had. And then to withdraw on this tour, piggybacking off of the security threat that New Zealand received, that they did not, by the way, share with the PCB. They didn't share what the threat was. They didn't share what the information was that they received. So PCB, whether they could deny it or not, or refute it or not, or make the proper arrangements or not, is left to be seen, because they don't even know what that information is or where they got it from, right? So New Zealand, I think, acted hastily in that they did not present that information and work towards a solution. Now, I agree, the player safety thing is huge, and prioritizing the players is important. But let's quit this whole, you know, the well-being of the players and all that stuff. Let's stop with that. The biggest reason that they're doing this is because the players are the money driver. They are driving the cash flow. And if the players aren't there, there's no money coming in. This is always about the money. So enough about this, you know, coping with long periods of COVID bubbles. That's bullshit. Because if this was an India tour, they didn't care if there were any bubbles there. They didn't care if there was, you know, COVID spikes. The tour was going to happen. So I can't believe that this is happening in 2021, where we're supposed to move past these things. There's supposed to be diplomacy. Now, Pakistan has said that they're going to, you know, voice their concerns at the next ICC meeting, which, you know, who knows how far that'll go when it comes to actually having an impact. But I think this is ridiculous that these boards are like isolating Pakistan from basically hosting a proper tour, because that was the big concern for Pakistan fans and the Pakistan Cricket Board, was that when are these big countries going to come tour? When are these money-making countries going to come tour? We've had enough of, you know, the Zimbabwes, the Bangladeshes, and the West Indies. We want some of these, you know, the big-time players to come by. And I think pulling a security threat is one thing, but to unilaterally make a decision to leave and not even collaborate and see what the threat was and make a further assessment on it is, I think ridiculous. So that's my take on that. It's just a ridiculous thing for England and really New Zealand to a certain extent. I don't know how this is going to play out at the T20 World Cup, which is scheduled to happen in October. But I do know that there will be a little bit of extra motivation from the Pakistan side.
Well, you saw, like, the extra motivation is not false, although you got to kind of question the way these Pakistani senior ex-players went about it. Like, Imran Khan, Ramiz Raja, Wasim Akram, all these guys, like, let out tweets and statements and made, like, reaction YouTube videos where Ramiz Raja was like, he's the PCB chairman. So he's like, his quote was, "We go to the World Cup now, and we only had one team in our target to beat, which is our neighbors, India. Now they add two more teams that we are aiming to beat, New Zealand and England. So pick up the strength and develop a mindset that we are not going to lose because they did not do right by us, and we will avenge that on the ground." So this is kind of just like a weird thing to say, where you're saying that you're so focused, that you're focused on India, like, yeah, great, we get it, your rivals. But now you're adding two more teams to your hit list. It's such like a weird thing to say, but like you said, it is a way of, I guess you could say, motivating your players. Whatever it takes, right?
I'm with Ashay. I mean, yeah, just adding fuel to the fire.
It's an odd statement from someone who holds a position like Ramiz Raja does as the PCB chairman. I think, unfortunately, the big losers here, once again, are Pakistan cricket fans who just haven't been able to experience their team, no matter what the results have been, haven't been able to experience their team in their home country. And that's disappointing. Now, what remains to be seen after all this is what happens with the PSL going forward, because those players are coming there to make money, and the PSL has been a money maker. So we'll see exactly what happens when the PSL comes around. Do these players prioritize that money, or do they say, no, we're concerned about, you know, the security issues? So we'll see what happens when the PSL rolls back around. Anish, I'm going to pivot to you now for this India-England test series, which concluded 2-1, which many of us predicted, but the fifth test was not called off due to weather. It was called off due to COVID concerns after two physios in the India camp tested positive. And the reason I'm pivoting this to you is because I have a lot of questions about what exactly the operating procedure is going forward, or how the BCCI has operated after the tour was, or the final test match was called off. So the fifth test gets called off, and there's a week in between when the test would have concluded and the IPL was scheduled to start in UAE. The restart was scheduled to begin. There was reportedly a quarantine period of 5 days for all the India players who were deemed close contacts with the physios. If the concern was that the players were testing negative for a few days and would manifest symptoms later because there's an incubation period for COVID, we know that that incubation period can be more than 5 days. So where my disconnect is why wasn't this match given more priority, and why couldn't they have played it the following week? If anyway, under a normal quarantine, you'd be out for 2 weeks, right? In a typical incubation period, you'd be out for 2 weeks. So I guess that's where my disconnect is. Could you shed some light on that?
Yeah, it's a challenging situation. I do actually think that in terms of the quarantine, they acted appropriately. So if someone is asymptomatic, but they do have a close contact with a known positive, then they do need to quarantine for at least 5 days. And generally, the recommendation is to be tested between days 3 to 5 after your exposure. And if you pass that period, then actually you are okay. You don't have to wait the full 2 weeks. Now, if you develop symptoms, it's a different story. But I feel like from what we've heard so far, they were all asymptomatic, but because they were all deemed close contacts, that's the reason why so many members of the Indian team would have been out for at least the start of the test match. Now, in terms of your second point about rescheduling the test match, we have spoken many times on previous podcasts and griped about the fact that we can barely get reserve days for one extra day of cricket, whether it's due to rain or other circumstances. So having a test match pushed even by a day or even multiple days, As much as I would have loved for that to happen, given what we've seen in the past, I just knew that wasn't feasible at all. Which is really unfortunate because, you know, the ECB and the BCCI are taking a huge hit by canceling an entire test match.
Yeah, they are taking a big hit. Now, I agree with what you're saying, and obviously you know this on a much better level than I do. So I agree with what you're saying. I understand what you've said. Now, the players were testing negative after the whole situation was kind of, you know, unraveling. After everything had happened, the players were testing negative. So the match in theory could have been held that week because I believe the match got called off even before day one, but the players continued to test negative. So I guess after how many negative tests?
The morning of the first day.
Right. So after how many negative tests, I guess my first question would be then, like, how many negative tests do you need to confirm that somebody is in fact COVID negative?
Well, it would have had to have been 5 days after the exposure date, and that's the day. I don't know the exact date. I'm not sure if either of you know when that date was, but that's really the timeline that they're working with.
Okay, so it doesn't matter what they do in those 5 days. It's after that 5 day period that is what counts.
No, I'm saying that, like, within that 5 day period, I mean, they probably were testing them every day because they can, but, you know, if I was seeing someone in clinic, I would just tell them, get tested on day 5. If you're negative, then you can go back to normal. If you're positive, it'll show up by then.
Okay. All right. So that was sort of the incubation period. That's okay. I understand now where that logic comes in.
This is for patients without symptoms again.
Okay. So yeah, asymptomatic. Yeah. 100%. Now, I also want to throw in another aspect of this, and that is vaccination, COVID vaccination. I'm assuming that all these players have been vaccinated. I'm assuming that the physios have been vaccinated. I'm assuming that the coaching staff has been vaccinated, at least to a level where we can talk about having some sort of immunity. Because from what I understand, there was no COVID bubble environment this time around because the situation in England has kind of settled down a little bit. So
there was no formal COVID bubble.
Right, right.
But I think, like, the press still made, like, you know, news out of people going, players, especially English players, going out to bars and stuff after.
Right. So with vaccination involved, when vaccination is involved, and from everything that we've seen, we're understanding that vaccination is considered like the gold standard, that if you're vaccinated, you're protected, you're safe. If all the players have been vaccinated, does it matter that they're all on the ground at the same time and the virus may be around? Does it really matter, right? Because they're asymptomatic and they've all been vaccinated. So the risk is considerably low, right? That's the end game of this whole thing, that the virus will still be around. It just won't be as deadly because everyone's protected.
I wouldn't necessarily say that's entirely true. I mean, with all of the new variants that have been spreading, we're seeing that the vaccine is less effective at preventing the spread between people, but it still remains effective in terms of preventing people from getting severely sick if they do get the virus. So, you know, like, even if, like, the three of us were hanging out in a room and all three of us were vaccinated, but one of us were sick, that's a room I definitely would not want to be in. Now, I'd feel a little better having a vaccine in case I catch it, I won't be as sick, but the risk of transmission is still there. But, you know, being out in an open field, yeah, I think that part of it isn't as much of an issue, but you know, the players, they all have contact with the ball, so that's one easy way to spread it around. And then, like, you know, they're in locker rooms and other close quarters that, you know, we don't see. And so I think that that type of spacing does still pose an issue. The other thing is, I really don't have much confidence in saying that all of these players and coaching staff are even vaccinated right now. I don't know if I can believe that.
I think they are. And again, this is not coming from a place of skepticism I have genuine questions about what has happened through this process, because obviously the whole England camp was saying, not the players, but the former players and the media basically saying that, oh, this test was canceled because the players had to, you know, go for the IPL. And this was all about the IPL, and the IPL is the moneymaker, and they did not make the effort for the fifth test to happen, which to a certain extent is true. But from my understanding, right, we've talked about, you know, we just saw the statements from ECB and to a certain extent New Zealand and other countries have expressed this as well, of COVID fatigue among the players, of being in COVID bubbles and having those restrictions. So the idea that you would call off the match because of fears of COVID while at the same time having the fatigue of the protocols and being in these COVID bubbles, it just seems a little sketchy to me.
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed how this was handled. I mean, as much as I love my 2-1 prediction coming true, I think everyone wanted to see a fifth test. And so, you know, I hear England's grievances and saying that, oh, it seems like India got off a bit easy. And I mean, I would agree. I would think that, you know, if India can't field a team because of COVID, they would have discussed this ahead of time before the series, and there would have been a standard that either they would have had to forfeit or like replay a match or, you know, something else. But I don't think this is how they drew it up at the beginning.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think that there should have been some sort of stipulation when a match is called off due to COVID or there's a COVID outbreak in, you know, a camp or COVID tests in another camp. We're seeing this with the NFL and college football, that if you can't field a team due to a COVID outbreak in your program, you forfeit the game. Like there have been the tools are at your disposal now. And if you don't take advantage of them and you're not careful, that's no longer on us. That's on you. So I wonder if the ICC will adopt that standard. Now, it happened to be India in this case, so I highly doubt it. But I wonder if that's a standard that will be applied at the T20 World Cup, for instance. Because you can't miss games, so to speak, in that format. It's just, it's too close of a competition to have a missed game here and there impact the results. So I wonder if that standard will be implemented going forward. Now, let's talk about the actual cricket that happened. So when we last left off, we talked about India going up 1-0 in the series, and England basically had to respond. And England did respond. And it was mainly the openers that change that happened worked for England. And I would say that it worked through the third and fourth test. They just didn't get the result in the final test, which India did. But I would say the opening change, at least through two tests, worked for England.
Yeah, I mean, they got so much more production and confidence out of Burns and Hamid rather than Burns and Sibley. And we see so much, as Burkett, your openers truly make such a big difference in setting the platform for the innings for the team. And most importantly, playing out the new ball when it's the most dangerous. Being an opener is a unheralded job just because you're out there in the worst, really the toughest of conditions to face, and it takes a lot of skill in order to do well. And you know, Burns and Hamid definitely gave England a lot more stability in that standpoint throughout the rest of the series. Now, unfortunately, their middle and lower order really dropped the ball, so that's really what ended up costing them.
Exactly, Anish. You mentioned that England's middle order didn't click in the fourth test, really, and a little bit in the third test. They ended up getting away with it, largely due to the contributions of the openers. But that fourth test, India's bowling attack came to play, because once again, similar to the second test, England had a chance at the end of that match to win the match, chasing down a total. And if there's anything we know about England in recent history, is that they back their batting, and any number that's on the board, they believe that they can go hunt it down. But India's bowlers came to play in that fourth test match.
Yeah, and that fifth day was such a change because England went into stumps 70-odd for no loss after 30 overs. So, you know, they've played out the new ball, and you know, their openers were looking confident, and then, you know, India got the ball to move, keep moving, and they changed up their strategy, got a good night's sleep, and man, that fifth day was a clinic.
It was just incredible to see because you were just kind of seeing a role reversal where, you know, India is using the pitch on the fifth day to their advantage. And I know they only have one spinner, and you can always question about why is Ashwin not on the side, whatever. But Jadeja really, you know, took advantage of the slot he got. And both, especially with bowling, but also as a lower order batsman.
Yeah, that was one absolutely wild that, you know, Ashwin, I don't think he didn't even play a game, did he?
Nope.
And he's like the number one test spinner in the world. So, you know, that really speaks to itself. That India truly backed their pacers in these conditions, and they came good.
Do you think that was the right? I mean, ultimately, it became the right call. Do you think Ashwin should have gotten a match, or do you think that it was the right move to stick with the Pacers?
I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. Because in hindsight, like, obviously, the players did well. There was some lower order depth, especially with Shardul. He got 250s in two successive innings in the same match. Six wickets with the ball. So, like, I think they, you know, I think just, like, playing with the conditions, like, having a tail that can wag, two lower order or middle to lower order on-rounders, you know, clicking together. So, in hindsight, it looks like a good move. And obviously, it's England, so, like, who's to say that you really do need to start a specialist spinner?
I think what India was seeing was they weren't getting consistent performances from their middle order, from Pujara, from Kohli, from Rahane, from Pant. No one was batting consistently well throughout the series, and so even more reason to give yourself an extra bat down there with Jadeja, which, you know, Ashwin is no slouch with the bat, but you really saw what Jadeja can give you in the series.
Absolutely. And we talked about that on the previous podcast where India was going to have another bat. Now, obviously, Jadeja was a question mark with the bat at times in his test career, but he came good in this series. One name that, Anish, you mentioned just now that I think deserves a little more scrutiny is Rishabh Pant. And the reason is because we know the style that he plays. And when it clicks, it's fantastic. But when it doesn't click, it's really a huge detriment to a team, especially when you're trying to see out a day or see out a session even. It's really difficult when you know that one player is just going to go swing at everything. And that's basically how he got out in each of the innings. It wasn't like there was this brilliant delivery that was, you know, that was completely going to take out anybody. He got out so basically swinging the bat.
So the thing with the Rishabh is when you're playing in a test match, obviously his talent is undeniable, but it's hard to say that he doesn't fall for the most basic of test traps where you know, hit him short a little bit, put in a fine leg, hopefully he goes for a shot and he just edges it up in the air or tries to, you know, gets irritated or frustrated after facing the same ball over and over and tries to swing for the fences and mishits it. That has been the case. But like you said, the lows are lows, the highs are highs. So on one hand, he could literally win you the match on, you know, in a session single-handedly. But in the midst of a collapse, like, that's where it's to be more flexible, and you could say, okay, even though Rahane is having a bad patch, you just have to like play with the captaincy a little bit and say, with the batting order a little bit and say, Rishabh, I think he's old enough, mature enough to where he should be able to play to the match, the day, the session that's being played and what requires of him.
Yeah, he was a big disappointment for me in the series. I think in the last innings, he got a 50. But yeah, he was just looking like a free wicket to England every time he came up to bat. And, that, you know, that's really, really sad to see from a wicketkeeper as talented as him. But, you know, we've seen the highs of Rishabh Pant and, you know, we saw the lows in this series, and you know, hopefully he'll take this back with him and he can improve in the future. I think his keeping was okay, but, you know, like what we talked about in the past is his keeping up to the stumps is more of what's left to desire. And with only Jadeja being India's only spinner, we didn't really see him as much of him up to the stumps in this series. He did take some nice catches behind the stumps, though.
Yeah, I think his keeping in general was okay. I think his batting was a big disappointment. One player who earlier in the series was struggling was Virat Kohli. And we talked about that and what the pressures were for Virat. I think he did significantly better in the third and fourth tests. But again, there has been some concern over his form. He's going to step down from captaining the T20 team after this T20 World Cup. Do you think that's kind of the biggest thing for him, is just this unnecessary load of captaincy in all three formats? Because we've seen from other countries, they have different captains for different teams with the formats. And they have players even for the different formats. Do you think it's that?
100%. Because India and England are the two teams that are the busiest. They play the most cricket. So Virat Kohli, especially like, you know, right up after IPL, 17 matches in like 25 days or like 28 days. You can't just be doing that. Switch straight to test mode, change your mental and physical, like batting, captaincy, mindset so quickly. And obviously, like, he set the bar very high for himself. But when we're looking at 2016 Virat Kohli, one of the best years ever by any batsman across history. But that being said, I do think it's an undue burden. You can't really captain all three sides internationally and domestically, especially given like the Indian pressure to perform in every single inning. And I think it's that and also being the busiest. You know, I think he played the most cricket, the second most cricket since the whole pandemic.
Yeah, it's it's another one sad to see. He's just become such an icon as a captain, but, you know, the good thing is he's able to, you know, be introspective and realize that, you know, he wants to take some more time and focus on himself, you know, focus on his family, take a load off of his shoulders, which really I feel like can only benefit his performance as a player. And fortunately for India, they have some other great options at captain. You know, we've seen other countries where their captain resigns or steps down for one reason or the other, and you're just looking around like, well, who's going to be the captain? And fortunately, India have, you know, Rohit Sharma. His track record speaks for itself. He's I don't know the exact stats, but he might have even better numbers than Kohli, truthfully, and as a team captain. But you know, India also have a lot of up and coming younger players in the T20 team, and some of whom are even like captains in the IPL. And so I think this is a really great opportunity to help Indian cricket growth while still having him around for a while to help them out.
Yeah, I think they're grooming, you know, Shreyas Iyer, Rishabh Pant, KL Rahul. Obviously, they have Rohit for the time being, but he's also, 33. So for the time being, I think he's a fine choice for a limited overs captain. He has a good track record. Rahane has been vice captain before too, and captain whenever Kohli and Rohit haven't played. So not a bad set of problems to have by any means.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that there are captains who in the IPL are captains for their respective teams. So there are captain options when it comes to, you know, Virat Kohli moving aside from the captaincy position. Now, he's obviously still going to be in the lineup, so he's still going to be there, and hopefully his performance will improve. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the IPL and the restart that has happened, as well as making some updated predictions based on what we've seen through the first couple matches. You're listening to the Follow On Podcast here on followoncricket.com. Welcome back into the Follow On Podcast here on followoncricket.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and wherever you get your podcasts from. We're talking about the IPL restart. We were about halfway through in India when the COVID protocols, so to speak, came up short, and the virus was able to breach all three bubbles, and four teams were affected in a span of 4 days, and that pretty much called off the tournament at that point. It's happening in the UAE again, this time followed by the T20 World Cup, which will also happen in UAE. I just want to point out how ironic it is that when this pandemic first started back in March, and we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't even know whether sports were going to come back anytime soon. And ultimately, it took 2 or 3 months, but sports ultimately did come back, and cricket ultimately did come back. BCCI, who was scheduled to host the, India was scheduled to host the 2021 T20 World Cup. Australia were scheduled to host the 2020 T20 World Cup. So there were two editions. The Australia edition got pushed to 2022 for some reason. Money. And India's kept its hosting rights for 2021. But now, the T20 World Cup is not going to be in India. It's going to be in UAE. And I think there's going to be capacity limits on the crowds as well. So all this pivoting and all this maneuvering just to protect the bag didn't work in the end. Because guess what? You didn't know shit in April 2020. Like you thought you could predict the future and you couldn't. And I think it's ironic. The IPL, though, through three games, let me tell you, it's been bad. It's been really bad to watch. Like, the quality of cricket from some of the teams is just not good. And that's partly because they haven't played a lot of cricket recently, but it's just not up to the mark. And it's somewhat expected because, again, they're coming from all over the world and you don't have time to build that chemistry. You don't have time to get those plans sort of settled in. You don't have time to train as much. But I mean, hopefully it should improve, right? Because I don't know what you guys think, but it has not been good so far.
Yeah, I wouldn't take too much stock in these first couple matches for any of these teams. I mean, yeah, some players they have been playing, most players have not, and you know, also getting used to a new set of conditions. There probably wasn't much warm up time, especially for the Indian players. You know, you're going to lose the quality there. And then also just anytime you're watching a cricket match in India, there's a whole lot more spectacle and other stuff going on during the match that, you know, draws you in. And, you know, you're not going to get as much of that in the UAE. So I think it's going to be a rough transition, but I think things will smoothen out soon.
I think it's worked out decently well where you could say the second half of the IPL, all these players get like 6 matches, and then the T20 World Cup starts. So it kind of a warm up, especially given that it's at the same pitches.
Yeah, but they're not viewing the IPL as warm up matches. They're trying to win the trophy.
No, they're not. Of course, but like,
unfortunately, it looks like some teams are viewing it that
really
way.
Hard. Yeah, but having a restart is so strange. Like, how are you going to get into the middle of the season gear when you, you know, either took a summer off or played a summer of test cricket in far, far faster conditions?
I agree with that, Ashay. And I think another factor is that so many international players have just withdrawn from the IPL restart, that they said that they don't want to participate in prioritizing that T20 World Cup that's coming up right after the IPL. So I think that definitely has an impact on it as well. But another observation that I think through all three of the matches so far, at the time of this recording, there have been 3 matches that have taken place from the IPL restart. All 3 matches, I think the one observation that I have from T20 cricket in general is that you can never kind of take your foot off the gas, that you have to be going 100%, 100% of the time. Because even that small lapse can allow the opponent to come in and steal the match. It happened to Mumbai Indians, and it happened today to Punjab Kings, that you can be on top and absolutely dominating a match for 90% of it. And granted, Mumbai Indians was less than 90%. It was probably like 45%. But you can still ultimately lose that match because you take your foot off the gas.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. You know, T20 you think of as a short game, but things can change so quickly, and that's what makes the format so fun is, you know, you can have a partnership rollicking along, and then all of a sudden, bam, one wicket turns into five, and, you know, a team can't chase 8 runs from 2 overs. Like, it's such an unpredictable format, and what it goes to show is that both teams are always in the match. It just takes one ball to completely change the match, and you have 120 each side, so... I think it really makes it more exciting, truthfully.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that it does make it more exciting, and it does kind of add to that thrill of the IPL and T20 cricket leagues in general, and T20 cricket in general, that anything can happen. It only takes one or two deliveries. Let's do some updated predictions now. I'll read the table as it stands of this recording. Sunrisers are at the bottom. They have played 7 matches at this point, and they have only won one, so they have 2 points. The next contingent is KKR and Punjab Kings. Punjab Kings have played an additional game, but both teams have 6 points. Rajasthan Royals stand in 5th place right now on net run rate. They have 8 points. They're tied with Mumbai Indians, who also have 8 points, but are in 4th. Because of net run rate. RCB is 3 with 10 points. And Delhi and CSK each have 12 points. At the top, CSK has the superior net run rate. Every team has played 8 matches so far, except for the Punjab Kings. They've played 9. Sunrisers have played 7. Guys, who do you think are the 4 playoff teams and the champion?
I'll go first. I think CSK and Delhi will comfortably be in the top 4, and I think the other 2 spots are going to be battles. I think Mumbai will end up making it just purely because of their experience, and you know they've won the league so many times. It's really hard to say to count them out. I'm going to go back to KKR as my 4th team. You know,
oh, that is a dangerous game, Anish. That is a dangerous game that you're playing.
Oh, I know. It's like a bad X. You just keep going back and hoping it's different the next time around. But I am fishing. I'm hoping that the change of scenery, I believe that this change of scenery and the break that they had from each other will bring them closer together. And I think they are the team that's going to make the run to grab that last playoff spot.
I will say, if any team needed the break, it was KKR. Because what they were doing in India was terrible. So it can't be worse than that. I see where you're coming from there. But that is a dangerous prediction right there. I like it, but that could go south very quickly for you.
Oh, I know it can. And, you know, the other thing I think I'm thinking about is, you know, they did lose Pat Cummins, and I really actually don't think that's such a huge loss for them because he really didn't perform well with the ball or with the bat, but he kept finding a way into the lineup because he had such a big price tag on him. And so I think they have enough other talent around them and hoping that, you know, that batting lineup will step up a little more. You know, Dre Russ is now coming off of the Caribbean Premier League season, and so he's going to be much hotter than he was earlier on in the season. And, you know, he can turn the game at any time. So I am buying KKR.
I actually have two. I think I agree with 3 of yours. CSK. Oh, actually, all 4 of yours, actually. Delhi, CSK, Mumbai, KKR.
Ashay, that is a dangerous game that you are playing.
Yes, yes.
This is a dangerous game that both of you are playing with KKR.
I mean, Rajasthan Royals are just perennial chokers. For some reason or another, they collapse. They just don't have the will. Let's see.
The team that they just played today.
Yeah, I know.
Actually,
Punjab
is in that boat as well.
They are, but Mayank Agarwal is really good. And I think he can continue where he left off in the first half, like he showed today, actually.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting.
It's the rest of their lineup after their openers that just truly inspire no confidence. It's volatility without any type of control.
100%. 100% agree with that. And although it's gone
the lineup, like, come on.
It's gone more in the opposite direction though of what you want. I wouldn't even say it's been volatile. I would say it's been bad. Because it's not like there have been many good performances from the other Punjab batsmen. So I would say that today, right, like both teams tried to lose and ultimately one team lost the match between Punjab and Rajasthan Royals. I think Sunrisers unfortunately are out of it. I know they have an extra game to kind of come up with these teams, but I don't think they have it in them, especially, you know, Bairstow's out. So I don't think they have it in them. I'm going to go with the four teams that are currently in the top four spots: CSK, Delhi, RCB, and Mumbai. I think those are the four teams. They were the best teams at the time. I still think they're the best teams now. And let's head into championship predictions. And I am going to stick with my preseason prediction, which is the Delhi Capitals. Shreyas Iyer is back. And I believe that the Capitals have the best lineup and the most firepower. And they are ready to take that title after coming up short last year. I believe this is the year for the Delhi Capitals.
Yeah, absolutely. All aboard. All aboard. Come with us,
Sean. No, false. I'm going to say Mumbai over Delhi in the finals.
Again. Wow.
Yes.
So Ashay has Mumbai in a three-peat. I'm guessing Anish is with me. We have Delhi. Yeah, ending Mumbai's...
I am so pumped to have Shreyas Iyer back, which means we don't need to see Rahane or Steven Smith at the three spot.
Rahane at the three spots cracked me up.
Yeah, I think Delhi's happy that they don't have to play either of those guys. I think Ricky Ponting is very pleased that Shreyas Iyer is back in the mix. So we got two Delhi Capitals predictions. We got one Mumbai Indians prediction. That's going to do it for us here on this episode of the Follow On Podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and wherever you get your podcasts from. And as always, on followoncricket.com.